Succession number 28463, Reel 1.
Jim Stone, Reel 1. Jim, where and when were you born?
Borough of St Marylebone, London.
Where was that?
It's near, just off the Edgware Road. Yes. It was a little street called Penfold Street, but it's no, I don't think it's any longer there now.
And what date was that?
That was in 16th of 11th, 1921. And I went to a little school at Catlin Street, just off Lisson Grove. And my father, he was on the Metropolitan Railway for 50 years.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one sister, who later was in the Wrens. My mother, she had been married in the First World War, and unfortunately, her husband, after 3 months, was killed in France, which I have his plaque and memorabilia from there, which I've received from my sister in recent years. My father, real father, was sent as a boy seaman on a ship in the Thames, one of Nelson's old ships, at the age of 11, because the families were too big for some of the people to families to keep them there. So he was more or less sent away at 11, and then automatically he became in the Fleet Reserve. But till he was called up, he was started as a lamp boy on Metropolitan Railway. And he was a friend of my mother's first husband, and so were her two brothers, both wounded in the First World War. One was in a wheelchair for months and months, wounded in the back. The other brother had plate in his head from wounds. And she had three sisters. One of them, her husband lost a leg in the First World War, and the other had a nervous breakdown. That was my Uncle Jack, Uncle Chris. And from living in Marylebone, we moved to Kilburn Park Road, London, North West Six. Spent several years there.
Where did you go to school when you were there?
I went to Essendine Road School, near Paddington Recreation Ground.
Did you enjoy it?
Excellent, but I didn't like school really.
I didn't
spend a lot of time because my dad used to bring us down to Devon, and my grandparents lived there, but they hadn't got the room. But next door to us was a diver, a deep sea diver from the First World War, and he'd bought the last cottage coming out from Ditson to Cornworthy called Wincote, the same name as our house. And so you can imagine there wasn't a lot of school time there, but I did go to the village school. And when I was 11, I went to Dartmouth School till when I was 14. That's, as I say, 70 years ago.
What were your favourite subjects?
Well, I like woodwork, but for education-wise, I'm more interested in get back, picking plums, fishing on the River Dart, football in the village. I played for the football village team. Swimming, I like swimming, but no academic subjects.
So you had an idyllic childhood, really?
I did. I had one of the best. When we lived in Kilburn, I could do as I pleased. I used to be up, the War Museum, all the natural history museums, up to the Round Park in Kensington Gardens with my big yacht. My dad won in a raffle at work. And I've had a good life and a lucky life. I say I've had a lucky life on board ship.
So when you left school, how old were you then?
Well, I left school at 14.
14, and what did you do then?
Well, I started off, there was a baker's, and he took to me, and I was helping in the bakehouse, making the doughnuts, Cornish pasties, and delivering bread to all round Dartmouth. And knowing what Dartmouth's like, up these big places, and you get to the top of a hill, and the lady said, I asked for a small white loaf, not a large one. But that was my life, part of my life in Devon. I went back to London, and by then, my family had moved while I'd been away. They moved to Wembley. And so I got a job there in Wembley, next to the Wembley Stadium. It was one of the old Empire exhibitions of Wembley, because there was several big buildings around there, the Empire, the Indian Empire exhibition, whatever. And I worked for a firm called Collars Limited, and I had, I was a van boy then, and that's where I met Wynne. Her family had come from the north. Her father was a miner, and they came down to the north, and she worked in the office there, and her two sisters also, one in the office and one inside. She had two sisters working there. We met when she was 15 and I was 16. And from there, when I was 17, I was became a driver, because we had our own driving instructor there and taught us to learn to drive. So that's when I became one of their drivers. At the outbreak of war, the firm, all the men drivers, we were all in the LDV, Local Defence Volunteers.
All right, so I'll just stop you there for a second.
Yeah.
So obviously that was 1939, yep. And you were 18 then.
Yep.
So prior to that, what thinking had you had about what was about to happen from what you'd read in the newspapers and heard on the radio?
Well, in my time at Dartmouth, the French were the Free French were coming, and there was loads of ships in Dartmouth, and I had the inspiration from the deep sea diver who bought this property and more or less brought me up. And we used to go, as I say, used to go around Babbicombe and that with the pony and traps, selling sixpence a pound black plums, apart from the other plums. But he inspired me, and my dad was in the First World War in the Navy as well. So that gave me inspiration of wanting to join the Navy. So.
And did you really think war was going to happen, or did you think it was going to save our
lives? It was in my mind that it was going to happen, because when they organised the LDV, and then we became the Home Guard, and I was a driver, there was two of us, myself and my friend Ginger Perry, we were the two drivers used to, and we joined up with a baker's firm called Garner's, a big baker's firm, and they had a rifle range in a side road, London Road, Wembley, and he also had a farm at High Wycombe, and us two drivers used to take all those volunteers for the Home Guard out to High Wycombe for manoeuvres, also to Horsenden Hills in Wembley on manoeuvres in our spare time. But during the week, 6 days a week for a fortnight, we went to, so that would be 12 different districts of London, and we done a different district every day. And coming home from Dulwich, on our way back, we'd gone out in the morning, and on the way back, the road we'd gone along, we were faced with a crater, bomb crater. So that was the beginning of the war. So we knew before the war what was going to happen.
Did you anticipate it with dread because of what had happened to your family in the First World War?
Well, I didn't know about my family till recent years, when my sister came here, and it was after my mother had died. My sister came up with his plaque and from the palace, from King George, came up with that information, and two of my dad's medals, because he was on the Dover patrol through the Channel. And also she had I'll show it to you, a little package in there where there's near enough 40 airmail letters from me out in the Far East, which my mother had kept, and amongst them was one for my sister, whose husband had been out, peacetime army out in India and the Northwest Frontier. Well, there, in amongst those, there was a letter from him that must have got mixed up with my mother's other letters, unopened. My sister was in the Wrens, because when she came up here, and my sister hadn't gone into any of these, you see. I mean, when my dad died, it was Wynne and I that went down there and into Whitstable. They lived in Whitstable, and we cleared everything out then. First of all, they lived in Wembley. Then they moved when they retired to Whitstable. We cleared the house out. And she couldn't face any of the, because my mother was closer than I was to them, you see. And in these letters, there was this one I'm talking about. And when she came here, and I said, there's a letter for you unopened, she couldn't face it. She was in tears. So that was one of the things. So that it wasn't until later years that I knew about her first husband. Wynne and I didn't know anything about it. And when we got married, my mother offered Wynne a wedding ring, you see, which was we thought was unusual. This was 1944. It's one of those thick, old-fashioned gold wedding rings. And we said, oh, no, she said, I don't want that. You know, she said, I'd rather have a new one. So it was only about 30 shillings, a wedding ring in those days. So anyhow, it turned out that this gold wedding ring was from her first husband, you see. But we didn't know the history of that.
So
he was in the Norfolk Regiment, her first husband, yeah.
So when you were with the local defence volunteers, how was that set up? Did you have an officer?
Yes, he was the transport manager, Mr. Binney. But Mr. Boyd was the owner of the firm. We had offices in Birmingham, where I'd occasionally do the night run in the big lorry, taking the collars up to Birmingham to be transferred onto Manchester and then onto Glasgow. That's where the main offices were, in Glasgow. But the lorry I used to drive that night was governed down to 30 miles an hour. So imagine travelling to Birmingham, all the way to Birmingham, 30 miles an hour. But we had all sorts of vehicles at the firm. Several were streamlined, Ford V8 engines. We had Commas, Ford V8s, Bedfords. But the Ford V8s were used and painted all white for H.G. Wells' Things to Come. But they used them as ambulances during the war. The government took those away, and we ended up with a Commas from a cable firm, which were in bad repairs and that. And
so your duties were as a driver?
I was a driver, transport driver, for the lads that were on manoeuvres.
What sort of armaments did they have? Did they have rifles?
Well, they didn't have anything at first, but the rifles they had were few, because we shared them with Garner's the Bakers. But at the same time, what I might add to that, was the inside staff, like Wynne, her sisters, and factory girls, they took it in turns to do night fire watching duties. So that was their duties. And as war progressed, a sister, Nell, who was married to the Dam Buster, she went into the RAF. That's where she met Bob and her fiance, I'll tell you about in a moment. And two brothers, Frank and Jim, they'd been in the mines. They were miners when they left school, but they got called up, which surprised me. That's why I took a miner's lamp to teen school, to tell them about the Bevan boys. They called those regular miners up to go in the army, so they were both in the army. Frank was wounded at D-Day on his birthday. And then young Wilf, he was out in West Africa, and later on to Italy, Sicily and Italy. And Wynne was in the Wrens down near Haybrook Bay, HMS Raleigh.
So how long was it that when you were in the local defence volunteers before you got your called up, or did you volunteer?
No, I didn't. I volunteered. I volunteered at, as I say, I couldn't get in at Devon, at Plymouth, because they were taking all the conscripts. So anyhow, I came back with the same firm again, and then, as I say, I ended defence. So I thought, well, this army, if I stay with this, it's going to be the army, and I didn't want the army. So I went to Horn Lane, Acton, and volunteered for the Navy.
What date was that?
That would be...
Roughly. How old were you?
Well, I'd be... When I was 18, I volunteered. I joined up in 1940, I joined the Navy. At Horn Lane, Acton. From there, it'll be down there. I went from there to HMS Duke to do basic training.
And what did that consist of?
That was, running up and down Malvern Hills, rifle drill, parade drills, everything like that, basic training, I suppose, for about 6 weeks, I suppose.
What sort of accommodation were you in when you were there?
Well, I can't honestly remember. I don't think we were issued with hammocks then. No, we weren't. No. So it must have been dormitories and bunk beds.
So what sort of... Did you make any friends there? Or?
Oh, yes. We had the whole class. There was about 12 in the class.
Yes.
And the one friend was Jimmy Vincent, probably a photo of him somewhere, and it's in the wedding photo. He 1944, we both went through HMS Duke onto Chatham Barracks, HMS Pembroke, where every day we marched over to the dockyard to do our stokers engine room training,
yeah.
Stokers engine room, boiler room, gear room, all that training.
Is that something that you'd wanted to do, to be in the engine?
To be a stoker, yes, yeah. Yes, yes. I volunteered for that, and so I became, when we was at Duke, we were second class stokers, still second class stokers at Chatham. Apart from all the engine room training, what have you, we also had to do damage control and firefighting, which involved going into the foreign part of a dummy ship, well, it was the actual foreign part, and only the emergency lighting, and then you were in there and you had plugs of wood and what have you, and you were taught how to attend to the damage to the ships, little plug holes, and the water would come down, they put the sprayers on with all water and you'd have semi-darkness and you'd have to fumble around.
Did you find that claustrophobic, or...?
No, I could cope with that. And I think we went through a gas chamber as well and took sharply off for a short while the gas mask. But anyhow, the damage control, I will say that the hammocks, you were taught to tie your hammocks up properly, seven rounds, and so that if you did happen to be on a ship where you had a shell right through it, you pung that up and then they put a canvas right over the sides of the ship. So that's what we learnt at Chatham.
How long did that take?
I'm not sure. Not sure. We got a transfer from there to Harwich, HMS Badger. That was a land base, and then I joined the 16th Destroyer Flotilla out of Harwich, which involved the Windsor, the Whitshed, the Mackay, and the Montrose. Shall I carry on? So from doing that was in end of 1940, we operated on the English Channel. It was, we took it in turns to be guard ship in harbour, but at sea we'd go out and it would be E-boat patrols at night, waiting for convoys either going through the channel or going up the east coast off the South End Pier. We'd be anchored off there and we'd escort the carriers, the convoys, up and down the coast.
What sort of armament did the ship have?
We had four-inch guns, I think it was. We had Horlicken guns, and I think we had light machine guns. I think there was, I'm not sure, three torpedoes or six, I'm not sure, on the Walpole.
And how many crew did you have on that?
Oh, I suppose about 120, 150, I suppose, crew. That was torpedoman. The torpedoman, that was their job. Then there was also the men who set off the depth charges, and then the gun crews, the main gun crews, the four-inch, and the other gun crews. In action, we were, as I say, damage control parties. Or we were on watch with three watches.
And what sort of engine power did that have?
Turbines, steam turbines.
So was that coal?
So when you go on, so we went to HMS Badger, joined the Walpole, and still second class stoker. Second class stoker, you're down on what they call the plates, right down below where the furnace is, and you've got all these sprayers, 12 sprayers, 1300 pound pressure going there, and there's auxiliary machine, but your main job as a second class stoker was keeping the carbon off the sprayer. And but they in the boiler room, then you got promoted to first class stoker, and your main job then was higher up the steel ladder onto the next area, and you had a big false draft fan to give you the extra false air, like you would with blowers, you know, you needed air into those sprayers to give you the flames, increase the flames. And Also, you learnt all about the auxiliary machinery in the boiler room. So, and also, you had to keep a sharp eye on the water level in your boilers. Apart from that, you used to, when you went in dockyards, you helped have a boiler clean, do all the boiler clean, all the dirty work, bilges, down the bilges, all sorts of work there.
Did you have much enemy contact?
Yes, we went out most nights against the E-boats, not so much U-boats. On the East Coast, it was mostly E-boats and protecting the convoys. It was always usually the last one that they come out and get put their torpedoes into the last boats in there. We picked up several planes of ours that never quite made it back to England off of Ramsgate, Goodwin Sands and things like that. We had to lower the whaler for that, because of the minefields that were about, so we'd go as near as possible with the ship, and then the whalers would go and pick the pilots up. One crew, the pilot, was his face was a bit of a mess, you know. And same ship, we brought down a Dornier, German Dornier, big plane, brought that down. From the East Coast convoys, we made our way up to Scapa Flow. Operated out there, going round to the west coast of Scotland, we brought back the Liverpool, HMS Liverpool, which had been torpedoed or damaged out in the Med. Then we used to escort the Mall boat up to Lerwick, and then we made our way up to Iceland, out of Reykjavik. We had a boiler clean in Svalesfjord, and there was some American ships there, and our job then was to part way on Russian convoys.
And what did you think of the Americans?
Well, not we only met a few there, but we met more out in the Far East, and I've got to give them their due. They went through at the landing of the Americans on these islands that I'll tell you about later. So, Reykjavik. We done those convoys. Then
the very cold? Was it very cold?
Very cold, and it was
always
well. 1942. I don't know how to put it down there, but Ely, city of Ely, adopted HMS Walpole, and that the Ely and the surrounding places. They raised £250,000 for Warship Week, and that helped to build new warships. The amount of that money, you know, it took. And they always used to send us comforts, woolly hats, and whatever, you know. And since then, we've had about four reunions. We were at a civic reception, the 12 that they could contact that was left of the crew. And our navigating officer was Ted Tooley. In his bowler hat, he led the parade. And in Ely, the cathedral, as our standard is laid up there, because after I'd left her in 1945, she hit a mine off Holland, and they managed to get her back to Tilbury, and they scrapped her. But there was men killed there, and another time we went up to Ely, invitation of the Royal Naval Association up there, and I laid a wreath on their cenotaph there. But as I say, they got a plaque in the Abbey and their flag in their museum. They got memorabilia and photos of the ship, and when the Walpole was broken up, someone must have taken the ship's bell. And later on, through the Navy news information, someone had seen it out that was out in the Catskill Mountains and saw it in a second-hand shop. And this person, him and his wife, flew over to England with the bell. So the ship's bell, HMS Walpole, if anyone ever goes to Ely, they'll see our memorabilia. But as I say, read, excuse me, two civic receptions there, wife and that. And then we went again, and that top picture there where there was a seat donated, and that is in a little area of new bungalows called Walpole Court.
And I really remembered it. So when you were on the Iceland, was that for convoying the
mostly
ships going to?
Yeah, going to Russia. But fuel situation, we never went all the way. but we got the, I got the Russian medal for what work we done in it. Apart from that, we had to do, well, we didn't have to do, but it came natural. We were chasing submarines and dropping depth charges, what have you, and unfortunately, in one of the rough seas, we lost our ASDIC dome. That's the dome underneath the ship which detects the submarines. So on that occasion, we had to go back to Scapa Flow and into the floating dock there to have that fixed up. Another occasion, we was going back to Scapa in really terrible weather. Our whaler on the port side was hanging like that, came adrift. We were off watch, waiting to go down in the engine room hatchway. That's myself and a couple more stokers. And three seamen or four seamen were detailed off to make fast this whaler. Well, the wave came over and we were able to grab three of them, like, but Able Seaman Jones, he had his Kapok suit on, but he was washed out on the one wave. And then as the ship rolled and he came back again, we managed to save him. But when we got to Scapa, we had to go ashore and he was mental, you know, so that was poor old Able Seaman Jones. We had some good men on that ship. There was Tom Manton, he was an ex-lighterman on the Thames, and Charlie Bray, he was another lighterman on the... No, he worked for Watley's in London before he got called up. Another one, Bob Lana, he was our buoy jumper. So, well, when we go into Scapa or any harbour, the whaler takes him to the buoy, and he's only got jeans and light clothing, really, and he... As the ship goes by, he grabs the line so that we can tie up to the buoy. And that's another sad story. Because when he finished his job and he came back on board, he always got a tot of rum. But unfortunately, because Jimmy Vincent, who joined up with me, was my best man. Charlie Bray, we met up after the war, and then he told us about Bob Lana, who the war had got to him. And he threw himself up at one of London's bridges.
What did you think of your officers?
Excellent. We had Captain Eden on a Walpole. And, oh yeah, when we had these reunions, our skipper then was in a home. I forget where, and he couldn't make it, sent all his best regards. And I think he paid for the painting of the ship. But he was called... He was captain. He was an admiral then, Admiral Crowley. He was excellent, Admiral Crowley. And by coincidence, which I didn't know till later, that I've got a photo of when we came from our raids on Sumatra in the Far East. We tied up alongside the Tenacious, and he was the captain on board. I wasn't able to see him, but that's a coincidence. But he was on the ship when she got hit off Holland, when she hit the mine off Holland. But he was an excellent captain. Lieutenants, we didn't often see the captains. It was always the first lieutenant or the bosun on the upper deck. But our immediate boss was the chief stoker, who planned out all the watches. And
was he a good man?
He was a good man, yeah, both ships. Excellent. The second one was excellent. And the engineer officer, I forget his name, but he was good too.
Was it difficult to cope with the heat in the engine room?
Well, not really. We got used to it. The hot job down there was the evaporator. So after being first-class stokers, I became, before I left the ship, acting temporary leading stoker. So was my best man, Jimmy Vincent. And one of the main jobs there was the evaporator machine. There's more about that on the next ship, because we stripped it down on the next ship. But that was one of the jobs on there. And I was motorboat driver for a short while on the Walpole in harbour in Harwich.